and welcome to the WTF1 podcast with myself, Hayden Gullis, and James Coker. Last time that you joined us on the podcast, we were talking all about the Singapore Grand Prix, and so much happened over the course of the race weekend that we left out a lot of news and a lot of other stuff that was going on around the Formula 1 weekend. So this podcast is going to be diving into that, diving into all the latest news and rumors and gossip around the motorsport network as well. And we're going to be getting into all of that. Starting off with one very important subject that we touched upon slightly in Singapore, but didn't properly dive into it. And that was the whole situation surrounding Daniel Ricciardo. Is it his last race? Is it not? What's happening for the future? What are Red Bull doing? What are RB doing? And for me personally, I think it's quite messy.
I agree 100%. I don't think RB and Red Bull as a parent organization handled this super well. Daniel Ricciardo never really had the opportunity to be a great driver. And a lot of this has to do with timing, but you look at his career on a macro level, 8-time Grand Prix winner, at times was a contender for the Drivers' Championship. Never really seemed to have the right car or situation to really compete for a championship. However, when it comes to the hearts of Formula One fans everywhere, he is certainly at the top. People love Daniel Ricciardo, and he has brought so many Formula One fans so much joy. And I think it's because that he wears his heart on his sleeve and shows his emotions in a way that many other Formula One drivers don't. And it's why so many people fell in love with him over the course of his career. And I think it's very interesting that instead of giving him a proper send-off and giving him a farewell tour, he might be done after the Singapore race amid kind of like secrecy. Like, we don't know what's going on. They didn't make a formal announcement that was his last race. There's just been like rumblings and rumors. And I just feel like Red Bull could have handled this better, because
I think that's Lord the worst thing about it. It's just the uncertainty. People talking to Ricciardo, well, this is your last race. And he's like, well, I don't know that. You know, I'm hoping that I'm going to be back, but it sounds like it's very unlikely if everyone's talking about it. And that makes it a whole lot worse. I think, you know, you could easily just announce prior to the race to then have that final send-off, allow fans to have that final send-off. Or it's done after a Grand Prix and no one knows about it, because I feel like that's a lot worse when a lot of people are just asking that question, giving him send-offs when he literally has no idea if he's going to be there or not. It just seemed so, so strange. And I think, you know, let's be critical at the moment. I don't think Daniel Ricciardo has had the greatest season. You know, he was coming into it alongside Yuki Tsunoda. It was basically outperform Yuki Tsunoda and there's a great chance of a Red Bull seat, which in all fairness, it looked like it was going to happen at the summer break. Daniel and Max left very happy. And then all of a sudden, you know, Sergio Perez is still in the car and everyone was kind of a little bit shocked, including the drivers themselves. I'm pretty sure I remember seeing Daniel kind of being like, he just didn't have a very good poker face for the following weekend when they were asking those questions. You could tell that something had happened, and it's just so strange that it's gone from, Daniel Ricciardo's going to be driving for Red Bull for the rest of the season. Let's see how he plays out. If he you know, fails to swim in that scenario as well, then I think it's fair for everyone to say, it's time for him to move on. Let's get that young talent that Red Bull have back up through the order, and whoever came out on top between Lawson and Tsunoda goes into that Red Bull seat for 2025. But yeah, it's just a very, very sticky situation. You've just got way too many people coming up through the ranks. And then you've got also these two corks in the bottle, which are Sergio Perez and Daniel Ricciardo. And yes, it's never nice to be critical of someone and say that, you know, they've got to go. No, I hate that. And you know, watching Daniel Ricciardo's interviews just breaks your heart. But, you know, we have to be critical at the end of the day. We have to look at things and say, you know, these aren't going the way that they should be. But I do think there's a lot on social media that are kind of taking the mick out of the situation, being, ha, he sucks, he's a bad driver anyway, because of maybe what's happened in the recent years. And I don't think we should remember Daniel Ricciardo if that was his last race. for what has happened in the last few seasons, but remember him for those incredible drives in the Red Bull days. You know, coming into the sport, young, fresh face, a couple of seasons, going up against Sebastian Vettel, you know, beating who was the season champion at Red Bull, and pulling off some incredible performances as well as some beautiful overtakes. And I think that's the Ricciardo we should definitely remember rather than, you know, just pointing and laughing.
I think we all wanted that fairy tale ending for him. I think we all wanted him to end up in a Red Bull, reunited with Christian Horner, reunited with Max Verstappen. And I don't think we anybody expected that he'd be contending for a driver's championship, but maybe get one more race win, one more Grand Prix victory, or one more podium. And I think Daniel Ricciardo's situation is not specific or isolated strictly to motorsport or to Formula One. This happens in all sport, where it often happens where you have a player who was once great or once very good, and they just don't know when to walk away. Mm-hmm. And some athletes walk away on a high note and they know it's the right time, and some just can't let go of their identity as an athlete and a competitor and can't leave they desperately want to continue to be a part of the show. And I think this is probably an example where Daniel Ricciardo, we know he made some errors in judgment throughout the course of his career. I think everybody agrees that he probably should have never left Red Bull. And that had to do with the fact that Max was starting to sort of challenge him as the number one driver here, and he wanted to go to a team where he was number one. He then went to Renault. Renault was okay until towards the end, and then finally he was getting his groove at Renault. But by the time he had found his form at Renault, he had already agreed to leave and join McLaren. And with the exception of that win at Monza, McLaren, his time at McLaren was uninspired, lackluster, not impressive for his standards or for fan standards of Formula One. But it seems like each time he chose to leave, he probably should have stayed wherever he was. I wonder what his career would have ended up like if he had never left Red Bull.
Yeah, certainly is something to speculate and wonder. And it is just a shame. And I think there's so many drivers that do fall through the cracks in Formula One. It's such a competitive sport, and it's also so dependent on where you are. You know, you have to get time right. You can be the best driver there, but if you don't time your moves correctly, if you don't get into the right teams at the right time, you're going to just be pushed aside and remembered as a race winner, which is still an incredible feat. You know, I think more people have been into space than have been race winners in Formula One. So it's still an incredible feat to win a Formula One race. But Daniel Ricciardo came in and has always expressed his ambition and his eagerness to be the greatest, to be on the top step of the championship and to win that. And sadly, I think, you know, after the Red Bull days, it was falling away unless a miracle could happen at McLaren or at Renault. And yeah, as you say, that fairy tale ending has never really got up and running again.
But I agree with you how heartbreaking his press conference was post the Singapore Grand Prix. If you watch that interview and you don't get choked up, then I'm sorry, you don't have a soul, because it was truly heartbreaking. You saw how much the sport meant to him, and you could see how much he was going to miss being there. It's not just about the racing. It's about the ritual of preparing and working with the people on that team, both in development on the car at the factory and also in the garage, in the paddock, being around all those people. And so I think for a lot of elite athletes, the next chapter of their life, or thinking about what the next chapter in their life is, very scary, given like, this has been their entire existence for 5, 10, 15, 20 years. Just the thought of the unknown must be really hard for him right now.
I think that's the difference between talking about the departure of Logan Sargeant. He's still a very young guy and a very talented driver, has done tremendously in junior categories. And whilst I was sad that obviously his dream of being a Formula One driver had ended for Logan Sargeant, I still believe that there is a career for him in a lot of other categories, whether he does a Nyck de Vries and he goes over towards Formula E or WEC, or he goes over to his American roots and gives IndyCar a crack and really goes and attacks that. It'll be interesting to see what he gets up to. But for Daniel Ricciardo, you know, someone who's already in his 30s, it's a lot more difficult to place him in seats that potentially he can go and have a successful career from, because a lot of teams, in all fairness, across all motorsport, they're really starting to look at young talent. We'll get to it later, but Formula E are starting to really pick young talent from coming through the ranks in Formula 2, Formula 3, Formula 1 junior teams. IndyCar as well, also looking at younger drivers too. So yeah, it is always going to be a worry that some hotshot is going to come in and be a better, more promising offer. But I'm really excited for him, if it is the end, to hopefully get a seat in IndyCar. As I've said, someone I've really started getting into in recent years. I think Daniel Ricciardo would be a great fit over there.
I think he'd be a great fit in IndyCar. I think it'd be a good transition, given it's another open-wheel single-seater series. I know he's expressed interest in going into supercars or NASCAR, but I feel like even though IndyCar does not have power steering, I do think IndyCar would be an easier progression from Formula One. We've seen so many Formula One drivers drive an IndyCar and do well, some not so well. But also, and we'll talk about this later, given the new charter system at IndyCar, where most teams are capped at 3 drivers, some cars are capped at 2 drivers, and a lot of those spots are already starting to get filled, you wonder, like, okay, let's say Daniel Ricciardo tomorrow wanted to go to IndyCar. There might not be a spot for him there.
Yeah.
Maybe there is in NASCAR. I don't know. But I think regardless of what he decides to do, coming to America from a marketing move, not just a sporting move, makes a lot of sense, because Americans love Daniel Ricciardo. And I feel like he fits into the aesthetic and vibe of Americana and sport here in such a seamless way that a lot of other drivers from Europe specifically just don't. So I think he would absolutely crush it in NASCAR or IndyCar, at least from a marketing and culture perspective. I can't speak on the competitive nature.
Yeah, I fully agree. And like I say, I'm really, really excited for that to potentially happen. But the NASCAR routes also do make sense as well, because I don't know, you might know better than I do, but there was a car that Zak Brown owns that he drove at Texas, or I think it was his last season with McLaren. And yeah, that was something that he loved. It was like one of his childhood cars growing up. Someone will correct me on what car that is, but it's something that he's loved. But it's quite funny, you know, how, you know, he gave it an extra crack with Formula One, but those offers of going elsewhere were always there with the McLaren days. You know, they, because they had a contract with him, they wanted to try and move him on somewhere else in their system. Formula E was somewhere that they were trying to push him. Now, I personally can't see Daniel Ricciardo in Formula E. I feel like he is somebody who loves a loud, roaring Gaz Gussler car. Like, that's what I feel right. Like Daniel Ricciardo likes, rather than electric-powered open-wheeler. IndyCar, though, you know, was probably an option as well for him in those McLaren days. So it'd be interesting to see maybe who picks him up. And maybe, who knows, maybe that door is still open. Maybe there's still a good relationship between Zak Brown and Daniel Ricciardo, so that he might promise another driver a seat and then worry even more about where he's placing all these drivers in IndyCar.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, but we wish him well. If this is his last race in Formula One, excited to see what the next chapter is. I know he is also an executive producer on a TV show, on a comedy show that's based off of a racing team. And I know some really experienced showrunners and writers and producers are attached to that. So that could be a fun, like, next step for mm-hmm. him. But I hope this is not the end of his racing career. And if he comes to IndyCar, you know what he could start a pursuit of.
What could he start a pursuit of?
The Triple Crown.
Oh, yeah, he can, because he has done Monaco. True. True.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair play. You know what? Go for it. To be fair, Indy 500 usually is more open with entries. It's just, you know, making sure there's a car and also having a good car underneath you as well. So Yeah, hopefully Indy 500. If there's no seat for him, go for the Indy 500, and maybe an opportunity opens up in WEC across for a full season instead. So yeah, it could be really, really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, think about it.
You think about it a lot.
But moving on, staying in the world of Red Bull, the exodus of talent from Red Bull team, Formula One team continues as McLaren has announced that they have signed Red Bull's chief strategist. Is it Will Courtney or Will Courtney?
I'm looking at that saying Courtney.
All right. Red Bull's chief strategist.
No.
It's French. Courtney. As McLaren has signed Red Bull's chief strategist, Will Courtney, as its new sporting director. Mm-hmm. When is this going to stop?
Never, until Red Bull completely replace all their big guns from the winning seasons, I feel like. Because a lot of people are moving on, want to find new challenges, want to do something new. They've been winning for so long, they're just kind of used to it now. And then they start losing, or not losing, but they're not on top as much. And for some people, there's that motivation to dig deep, stay there. But for others, it's like, well, okay, you know, I've done this. I can't see us getting back to there. I can see this being a slippery slope and we're just going to keep on falling. So yeah. I'm going to jump ship. And for this one, it's going, I'm going to jump ship to the team that is now at the top. So it sounds like Will just likes to be winning in Formula One, moving over to a top team. But of course, it is a promotion as well, going up to being the sporting director for McLaren instead of a chief strategist. And of course, I don't think it's a complete change of switch, because I think the sporting director just covers a lot of the chief strategists.
Strategist? Strategery? The strategeriest?
Stats? Strategy. and covers a lot of that stuff. I feel like that's a bit of a promotion, as well as, of course, going to the team that's winning. But yeah, I guess that's why they're all just jumping ship.
Also, we might see another big departure from Red Bull if the rumors are true. Max Verstappen is threatening to walk away from Formula One in response to the swearing incident, but I don't feel like it's just that. I feel like that's like the straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah.
But do you see a reality where in the next year or two, Max decides to walk away from Formula One?
No, but I think only because it's never really been seen before, a driver that is so young to be like, do you know what, I'm done. And somebody who is so good in Formula One to be like, do you know what, I'm good. And there'd be people that would correct me and be like, well, this person did it here, well, this person did it then. Fair enough. You know, I'm only 28 years old. I don't know every single driver all the way back past until the 1950s. But
yeah,
I think it would be a surprise. But yeah, he really enjoys, you know, GT racing when it comes to being on the sim. And I think that is something that he wants to go and try out, you know, go and do World Endurance Championship or do endurance races. And I think that's just something that maybe interests him more. Maybe he just wants a challenge because he's just, yeah, maybe Formula One just isn't maybe for him. And he's, you know, made a name there and he's happy and he wants to go and do something else. Who knows? But we'll wait and see. I feel like, I don't know about you, but I feel like he's the only driver who really is quite vocal about being like, do you know what? I'm not really feeling it. I'm happy to move on, or I'm quite comfortable.
Yeah, he gives like, and I know we talked about this before, he definitely gives like a Kimi Räikkönen vibe where he's there to drive because he enjoys it.
But Kimi stayed a long time though, so I would disagree. Kimi stayed.
But he walked it. He left for a while and did rally, right? But I know he was kind of pushed out from Ferrari because Fernando Alonso put him there. But like, he seemed to be a guy that like really was not interested in all the other stuff that was attached to being a driving. I'm not bad mouthing drivers like Lewis Hamilton or Fernando Alonso when I say this, because I respect and I am big fans of both those drivers. But you look at drivers like Fernando Alonso and Lewis Hamilton, And I'm bringing them up because they're both of obviously multiple time world drivers champions. Though they seem very concerned about their legacy and how they will be perceived in the history books of Formula One, and I feel like that's what keeps them in the sport. Max Verstappen does not seem concerned about how he is going to be perceived in the canon of the world of motorsport and Formula One when people look back at the history of it. He seems to only really care about his happiness, and like, which I think is like great, like that he wants to do what brings him joy in the moment. Where like I feel like if Fernando Alonso and Lewis Hamilton had had that mentality, they both would have left the sport a long time ago.
With Lewis and Alonso, if you told them, oh, you've just broken a record in Formula One for most poles, most wins, percentage, whatever, they are like, they're talking about, oh, I'm so thankful for it. You know, this is a great achievement and I'm really happy to keep on pushing and go for more. Whereas Max Verstappen, when he's told about that, he's literally like, yeah, but it's kind of unfair because we have more races in our seasons now. So I don't really care about those stats and statistics. And yeah, I just see that with Max. Like he's there to enjoy it, have fun. You know, Fernando Alonso is someone that wants to go and get the triple crown. He wants to go and be regarded as one of the greatest racers there's ever been. And I feel like Lewis Hamilton, potentially, if, you know, hadn't been a dominant car for in the recent years and still at a team that's fighting nearer the front end of the field and was sort of moved out, like Fernando Alonso was when he was in the McLaren days, and was just like, okay, I don't have any motivation for this, might potentially go over to WEC for one season or go and do an Indy 500 just to give it a go and just be like, yeah, let's go win this because I'm the best and I can do that. Whereas Max is just like, I don't care who thinks I'm the best. I just want to go have fun and enjoy it.
Yep.
And yeah, if he leaves, and it'll be a shock, but also not a shock at the same time because he's been warning us for so long.
Sure. Like I think, when in regards to Lewis Hamilton, I think if Lewis Hamilton had won Abu Dhabi 2021, I think he would have retired. I think with 8 championships, he would have ridden off into the sunset and moved on to the next chapter of his life. But the pursuit of that 8th championship to sort of cement himself in the GOAT conversation against Schumacher, since they're both tied with 7, I think that's what's kept him in. And I think if, in regards to Fernando Alonso, Fernando Alonso is a handful of points away from being a 5-time World Drivers Champion.
Yeah.
He lost to Kimi Raikkonen. He and Lewis both lost to Kimi Raikkonen by 1 point, I think, in 2007. And I think in 2 other seasons, he lost by...
was very close.
Yeah.
2010 was very close. Yeah.
And I think the pursuit of that 3rd Drivers Championship is what kept Alonso in Formula One. But I think you're right. I think Max doesn't care about that stuff and is ready to walk away at a moment's notice.
Yeah, I'll be shocked, but I won't be shocked. Right, let's keep within Red Bull Racing right now and talk about Christian Horner and a very interesting interview that Christian Horner had. They were asking him about Daniel Ricciardo and where does he place, what's going on, and he was talking about, you know, Isaac Hadjar, Arvid Lindblad in F3, who's a really exciting prospect for them, but also name drop George Russell in there and saying, you know, George Russell's out of contract in 2025, so it'd be stupid not to try and have a look at that. And you know, I think they are preparing for all this rumor and circulation, if there's any truth to it, of Max Verstappen jumping ship and going over to Mercedes for 2026. Yeah. They're preparing for that. They're getting themselves ready for if they need to find a replacement for Max, and they don't believe in the likes of Liam Lawson and Yuki Tsunoda, and it's a bit too far for maybe someone like Arvid Lindblad to get themselves into Formula One and start to be in a car that should be near the top of the grid.
I think Christian Horner was just messing with Toto Wolff. I feel like this was a total mind game, and you know, he knows both teams right now are not competing at the level that they want. Red Bull, yes, is still in contention for the constructors' title. Max still has a semi comfortable lead in the drivers' championship, but I think like both guys are down, and Christian Horner is looking for a way to get his rocks off, for lack of a better term. And he is, I think he's just trying to get under Toto Wolff's skin because they have this rivalry. I don't know if they straight up hate each other. I feel like they're more frenemies.
Yeah.
At this point. But I think it was to get under Toto's skin.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure Toto sort of clapped back, but said, like, George Russell is Mercedes and will always be Mercedes. So, yeah, we'll see what happens in that. I mean, I'm pretty sure there was an interview with someone from Mercedes that said they are looking at Max for 2026 and they are looking at Kimi versus George for 2025. And whoever comes out on top of that will potentially get a seat alongside Max for 2026. But if they don't get Max Verstappen, they're very much wanting to carry on with both Kimi Antonelli and George Russell, which is kind of a bit like, you know, you guys aren't quite good enough, but you're good to be our second driver. But if he doesn't want us, you know, it's like going to your current girlfriend and going, oh, my ex has just got back in touch, so I'm going to go see if that works. But if it doesn't, I'll still come back for you. Don't worry. It that's just seems worst. A bit weird.
That's a classic fuckboy move right there.
Exactly. It just seems so weird.
I don't know. I don't see George Russell in a Red Bull ever. That's just my opinion. But moving on, let's change gears just a little bit. Let's go to the world of IndyCar. I know a few weeks ago we were talking about who would be the right driver for that second premise seat. Mm-hmm. And I said Marcus Armstrong because he had IndyCar experience. He was young. I was like, oh, he's at Ganassi. I was wrong. I did not realize that Ganassi was cutting down their driver lineup from 5 cars to 3. And the reasoning is that they have an incoming charter system that I think was just officially signed and implemented, where teams are going to be limited to 3 cars a team in IndyCar. So right now, Chip Ganassi, who is the second most successful IndyCar team in history, Team Penske is the most successful, has 2 drivers confirmed for next year. 6-time IndyCar champion Scott Dixon, aka the Manu Ginobili of IndyCar. He's never going to retire. He's like the Fernando Alonso of IndyCar. He's like never going anywhere. And 3-time and reigning champion Alex Palou. They're both confirmed for 2025 at Chip Ganassi Racing. That's from Joey Barnes at motorsport.com. That third seat is still open. Marcus Armstrong is not going to be in it because Marcus Armstrong signed with Meyer Shank, mm-hmm. which is a competitive team. Felix Rosenquist is there. Dave Malukas did some driving for them towards the tail end of the season. However, that third seat is still open to Chip Ganassi. And guess who is getting a test with Chip Ganassi Racing later this month?
Is it the one that Logan Sargeant's doing? Or is it someone else? Logan Sargeant's doing a test, isn't he?
He might be. I didn't see a headline about that, but testing with Chip Ganassi is none other than 2022 F2 champ Felipe Drugovich.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting. Okay. South American vibes bringing over. I like it.
It'd be nice to see Felipe Drugovich getting some competition because I feel like Teo Pourchaire and like so many other F2 drivers, he's been in this reserve driver limbo for quite a while. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
But there's been a lot of stuff going on amid. So they have the charter system mm-hmm. that's happening.
So because Prema have joined, and obviously more teams are joining IndyCar just to kind of make sure that the grid doesn't get a little bit too big for pit lanes and also a bit too hectic.
Yeah. So they're still going to cap it at 27 entries.
Okay.
And there are 10 chartered teams for next year. Prema is not officially a chartered team. So they're going to be competing in IndyCar, but they don't have they haven't signed into this charter yet. I don't know exactly the specifics why, but next season we're going to have AJ Foyt with 2 cars, Andretti Global with 3 cars, Arrow McLaren with 3, Chip Ganassi with 3 down from 5, Dale Coyne Racing with 2. Hopefully Dale Coyne Racing has the same 2 drivers for the whole season. Cause the kind of joke in IndyCar is that Dale Coyne is like a rideshare service. It's like Uber or Lyft because it's like a different driver every week. And it's because Dale Coyne can't afford to have a driver there full time. So they keep swapping them out. Ed Carpenter Racing 2, Junkos Hollinger 2, Meyer Shank 2, Ray Hall Letterman, Lanigan Racing 3, and Team Penske 3. And then Prema will round out those final 2 spots with two cars as well, but they are not a part of that charter. There are going to be 27 cars in every race, with the exception of Portland, we'll have a 28th car. Okay. And that's going to be Yuri Vips with Rahal Letterman-Lanigan. Mm-hmm. You might remember Yuri Vips as a Red Bull Academy driver who semi got canceled for using a racial slur on a Twitch stream, I believe.
Yes.
But he has gotten some opportunities to drive an IndyCar, has done pretty well. A lot of people feel like he, you know, has learned from his mistakes and is trying to become a more mature driver in person. And then, of course, there is the Indy 500, which will have 33 cars that can qualify. And I mean, technically for the Indy 500, you could have 100 cars trying to qualify, mm-hmm. but you have to have an engine supplier agree to work with your team and your car. So you have to have Chevy or Honda be willing to supply you with the engine or power unit for your car before you can participate in qualifying. And I know Chevrolet already in an interview says that they're pretty much capped for the 2025 season. I think they're servicing like 17 cars or something like that. They're like, we're at capacity. We can't do anymore.
Could you imagine how long that, not only the qualifying day, but the bump day
the last chance qualification.
How long that would be with 100 cars?
Because there was a moment in the qualifying used to be over the course, I think, of 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And I believe there was a time in the 80s where there were like 100 something cars.
Jeez.
But it was a different time, you know, like cars ran off of dreams and cocaine. It was the 80s.
Exactly. I mean, you know, I'm there for it. But could bring back 100 cars. That'd be amazing. Maybe not the dreams and cocaine, but the 100 cars. I'm there for it. Just been announced news I've just seen from IndyCar. Ed Carpenter Racing, their lineup's been confirmed. And that is going to be Alexander Rossi, of course, formerly with Arrow McLaren, was already confirmed to be without a seat for 2025. Now he's finally signed with Ed Carpenter Racing, and Christian Rasmussen will be moving full time into the number 21 car. So that's literally dropped an hour ago, I think it is.
I love that. I wonder if they're still going to be sponsored by Guy Care. You know, Guy Care. They provide
an American version of Manscaped.
No, they're like a Hims competitor, so they provide like ED medication, hair growth pills, things like that.
Okay.
I called the Guy Care car the Bone Drone last year.
Bone Drone. Okay.
But that's it. I'm glad Alexander Rossi got a seat. I was sad to see him leave Arrow McLaren. I thought he was a nice balance to that team because they had a pretty, with the exception of him, their other two drivers were fairly young, and he also he's more reserved when you see him in like social media stuff. But I don't know if you've ever seen the podcast that he does with James Hinchcliffe. Alexander Rossi is very funny.
Yeah,
he just chooses not to like participate in a lot of the sort of song and dance that a lot of social media and comms teams ask drivers to participate in. But he's a funny dude. But also, Chigan, IndyCar news. This happened last week, and we didn't get an opportunity to talk about it. Jack Binion at the race reported there was an FBI operation at Rahal Letterman Lanigan's headquarters in Indiana. And the motorsport outlet Racer alleges that the source of the investigation surrounded an employee who left Andretti Global for Rahal Letterman Lanigan, an intellectual property that may have been transferred.
Ooh.
Might have our own little mini IndyCar Spygate. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Are they gonna then absolutely come out of the blocks in 2025 and just write up at the front to make things even more suspicious?
Maybe. I don't know. And I might piss off some people when I say this, but do you know who Graham Rahal is?
Yes.
I call him Lance Stroll with a dad bod.
Lance Stroll with a dad bod. Why? Because he's because isn't Rahal a famous family name in IndyCar?
Well, yeah, Bobby Rahal is considered one of the great IndyCar drivers in sports history. But he owns his dad owns the team.
Would you say it's more like a Michael Andretti or a, you know.
Yeah, it's probably more of a Michael Andretti situation for sure.
Because I think someone could correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't remember Lawrence Stroll doing some driving. Maybe he is an absolute.
I call him Lance Stroll with the dad bod because his dad owns the team, but like, but that it's just a better punchline. But I will say, Graham Ray Hall is a very good driver. He's a guy who.
Oh, sorry,
like,
Lance Stroll isn't. You come from a boy. Don't make us scrap it.
Well, Graham Ray Hall is the type of guy who like will end up on bump day for the Indy 500, but then he'll put it on pole at Mid-Ohio. Like, and that's what's amazing about IndyCar. You'll have a driver who's at the back of the grid one race that will be at the front in a different course. Like, some people are really good at ovals, some people are good at road courses, some people are good at street circuits, and it's just like, it's just so versatile. And there are some drivers that are specialists at certain circuits, and
then there's Stingray Rob, who just has an amazing name.
He just has an amazing name. Interestingly enough about Stingray Rob, and I know we're going on crazy tangents right now, Stingray Rob does not have the personality you would think for someone with that name.
No, not at all.
You would think with a name like Stingray Rob, he'd be like Kenny Powers from Eastbound and Down. You'd think he'd be like shotgunning two beers at the same time.
Yes.
Like mullet, like Southern, hick, just like two chicks at the same time, smoking Marlboro Reds. But Stingray Rob is super, super religious, very clean cut. Like, for lack of a better term, is like a total nerd. It's like a big Herb. His sponsor for much of last season was Pray.com. And it's just not the personality you would expect for someone with that name.
No. I was not expecting that at all. When I finally came across his Instagram page, I was like, oh, yeah, I got to give him a follow. I love Stingray Rob. And then he's reciting verses from the Bible. I was like, this is not what I expected to be coming up my feed when I followed Stingray Rob.
He has the aesthetic of a Mormon missionary, and he's like, hi, today we're going to be reading my favorite Bible passage, Thelonious Snuffleupagus 5210. All right. I don't know what I'm saying. But
I feel like if Formula One drivers weren't so media trained, like IndyCar drivers were, I can very much imagine that's what George Russell would be doing.
You think George Russell's religious?
Nah, but I just see him as very much like a Stingray Rob type.
Just a total cheese dick.
Yeah.
That's so funny. There's also this t-shirt that Stingray Rob wears at circuits sometimes, and it's like a flower with a smiley face on it, and it says, have a nice day, stop watching porn. I'm like, what?
My days.
Okay, dude, whatever.
They just now need, because you know how OnlyFans sponsors some riders in MotoGP?
Do they?
Yeah, so maybe someone in IndyCar needs an OnlyFans sponsorship to be alongside his t-shirt or his or that slogan on his car.
That'd be funny.
They're always wheel-to-wheel on track, tussling out there.
Who would be the driver who would drive the OnlyFans car in IndyCar?
Colton Herta.
I like Colton Herta. I was going to say Romain Grosjean because he goes hard.
I mean, he has got an incredible body, in all fairness. I'd subscribe to his OnlyFans. Romain Grosjean is someone that you think is a bit massive nerd. You're like, this guy is a skinny nerd. Like, he's a Formula One driver, but he's probably really skinny. Goes over to IndyCar, and there was like one shot of him at the pop on his Instagram, like surfing one weekend. And I was like, fucking hell, he is shredded. And then I've seen a picture of him like with his arms crossed. His forearms are bigger than my leg. Like, they're insanely huge. And I was like, Daddy Grosjean, Jesus.
His social media is weird, though. His selfies, there's something going on.
They're so
in his face.
Damn selfies. They are. They're the sort of selfies you see your parents who are in their 50s taking.
He also has like the smile and look of a former child star.
Yes.
Like someone who is like an actor when they were six. I don't know if that makes sense, but moving on out of the world of IndyCar into the world of Formula E. Formula E team Envision Racing has confirmed that they are going to keep Sebastian Buemi and Robin Freins, even though both drivers will be driving in WEC or WEC or World Endurance Championship next year. They will tentatively miss the Formula E Berlin E-Prix doubleheader for the 6 hours of Sao Paulo. Hayden, do you think Formula E drivers should be allowed to race in both series, or do you think the FIA should coordinate so that the two series don't have scheduling conflicts?
I think, you know, the FIA should coordinate that certain series don't clash. I mean, you look at the freaking Indy 500, and I know they're not owned by the FIA, but still, they could do a better job of Indy 500 and Monaco not being on the same weekend. And I think there's something else going on the same weekend, which is Formula E, I believe, is also that weekend. Whoever made that decision, what are you doing? But yeah, it kind of, unfortunately, it kind of puts Formula E down a little bit, that the fact that their own drivers are preferring to go and do WEC because they see that as a championship that is more valuable to win rather than to win a Formula E championship. So, yeah, an interesting one. But I feel like if you potentially, and that's the worry then, if drivers are already preferring WEC and saying, oh, I'm going to miss this race because I want to go race in WEC for that championship, then to go and say, you sign with us, you can't take part in any other series, they'll say, okay, cool, well, I won't sign with you then, and I'll go do World Endurance Championship.
I think Formula E pays very well, and I think Formula E pays significantly more than WEC does. But the impression that I've gotten, and I could be wrong, is that drivers love driving in WEC because they consider it to be one of the purest forms of racing. Mm-hmm. And they drive in WEC because they love it. It's like when you see an actor who wants to go do a play, like they consider it the purest form of acting and performance, but there's not a lot of money and glory in it, but they do it because of the love of the art form. And then they agree to go do like that blockbuster Marvel movie because it makes a ton of money.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like what I see in the comparison to like Formula E and WEC. Like Formula E has great marketing, pays very well. It's a little sexier, but WEC is like pure racing because drivers, I think if drivers had to, they would drive in endurance for free. That's how much they love it. And so I think it would benefit and behoove Formula E and WEC to coordinate that there aren't conflicts because you'll be able to attract better drivers to both series. And that could be an incentive to get better drivers into Formula E, bigger names into Formula E. If you say, hey, if you want to drive in Formula E, we'll also allow you to drive in endurance, and that will end up making up your entire year. And so you come race for us for a few weeks, and then you leave and you go do like the 8 hours of Bahrain or the 6 hours of Sao Paulo or, you know, 6 hours of Fuji or whatever. I think that would be the best of both worlds.
Yeah. Yeah. They don't have massive calendars as well, either of them. So it's not a case of like if you were doing Formula One and one of these where you literally wouldn't get a respite because the one weekend that you're off, oh, I'm racing again. So there is obviously, like, thankfully, you know, more gaps in between. If I was one of these drivers, I would probably pick WEC, if I'm honest. Now, I don't follow either series because I haven't managed to find time in my diary to watch either of these series. But I would pick WEC for one reason only. In Formula E, if I am the slowest one there, right, I'm going to be at the back and I'm going to be bored. There's no one going to be around me. But if in WEC, if I'm driving one of the best cars and I'm one of the slowest drivers, I'm still going to be overtaking the GTs and it's still going to be fun and I'm still going to be enjoying myself. So I would definitely pick WEC over Formula E for that reason.
I know there are certain teams, for instance, Tag Heuer Porsche will not allow their drivers to drive in both series. It's like it's a rule. And I think it's one of the reasons why Andre Lotterer stopped driving in Formula E, because he loves endurance and is doing very well. He's driving for Porsche Penske Motorsport and I believe the number 6 car, and they're primed to win the WEC championship this year. They have a very healthy lead in first, so like pending disaster, like they pretty much have it in the bag. I know 8 hours of Bahrain is points and a half, but a lot of these drivers just really want to be able to continue driving endurance. I remember listening to the Formula E podcast with the journalist Sam Smith, and he was talking about how much Antonio, not the singer, the motorsport journalist Sam Smith. He was talking about how much Antonio Felix da Costa misses driving in WEC, because a lot of people feel like this is the golden age of WEC, and he had experience driving and he misses it a lot and really would like to have the opportunity to drive in both Formula E and World Endurance Championship. And so I don't know. I think long term it benefits both series to coordinate so that drivers can do both, because they aren't the only drivers that do both. Like Nico Müller drives in World Endurance. Mm-hmm. Jean-Éric Vergne, Nick DeFries, Eduardo Mortara.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot. So yeah.
I also think Le Mans 24 hour, I swear it always clashes every single time with Formula One. That needs to also not clash with Formula One.
I agree 100%.
I think, you know, Le Mans is such a, it's one of the Triple Crown. It's one of the greatest spectacles in motorsport. And I think it should have its own pedestal. Just like Indy 500 should have its own day. And Monaco should have its own day. Thankfully, with IndyCar and Monaco, you can kind of do Monaco, at least European-wise, you can do Monaco midday and IndyCar at night. So they don't really clash in terms of watching the actual main action. But if you just want to follow everything across the day, then it should have its own day.
I agree. 100%. Moving on, staying back into the world of Formula E, F2 race winner Zane Maloney, the pride of Barbados. Has been confirmed that he will be joining APT for Formula E season 11. Former Sauber reserve driver and last year reserve and test driver for Andretti's Formula E team. Very excited to see what he does.
Yeah, he started off the season very well in Formula 2. I think he won both races. And he's been in the championship fight for the majority of the season, falling behind a little bit of now Bortoleto and Isaac Hadjar, but I think still very much in the mix for it still as well. So, competitive driver, and it'll be exciting to see what he can do over in Formula E. And I think, you know, Formula E are picking up quite a few younger talents. It was Taylor Barnard, wasn't it, from Formula 2 they've recently picked up as well, which is McLaren.
McLaren, yeah. He was their reserve driver last year, and I think he drove one or two races when Sam Smith hurt his hand or wrist in a shunt or a crash. But with the exception of two seats, the Formula E Season 11 grid is set. Porsche, Envision, Mahindra, Jaguar, driver lineups remain unchanged. Nico Müller is joining Andretti, which is a Porsche customer team, hinting maybe that this is a part of an eventual move that will get Nico Müller into a Tag Heuer Porsche car in the future. Maximilian Günther and Stoffel Van Dorn essentially swapped teams, with Günther going to DS Penske and Van Dorn going to Maserati MSG Racing. Jake Hughes will join Stoffel Van Dorn at Maserati MSG Racing from Neon McLaren. Taylor Barnard, which we said was promoted to that second seat at Neon McLaren, paired with Formula E season veteran Sam Bird. Sam Bird's been there since the very first season. He's one of the OGs. Norman Nato, who was Jake Dennis's teammate at Andretti last year, will join Oliver Rowland at Nissan. And so we have two open seats at ERT. And I think that's it. And I know last year it was Dan Ticktum and Sergio Settecamera. Who would you like to see in Formula E, Hayden?
Oh, geez. It put me on the spot here because, as I said, I don't have as much knowledge with Formula E. But if we were to be picking up younger talents or talents that have been pushing out, potentially there could be Sergio Perez without a contract. It's just whether he wants to go towards electrical racing. But could be an interesting option. I can't see the likes of a Valtteri Bottas or a Kevin Magnussen from Formula 1. I think Kevin Magnussen, you know, he's already done IMSA. I think he'll go back to doing IMSA, do World Endurance Championship or IndyCar. One of those three for me. And I think Bottas already said that if he's not in Formula 1, he's going to IndyCar. Joe, potentially, if he doesn't get a reserve role with a team, potentially could be going over to Formula E. I know that electric power vehicles is quite popular over in China, so could be a good fit for him over there.
One thing that's hard, though, is ERT historically is not very competitive.
Yeah.
So, like, you leave a series like Formula One and then go drive for a team that's not very competitive, you might be spending a lot of time at the back.
Yeah.
It would make sense if, say, like Checo Perez left Formula One and would drove Formula E. I would really only see him at like Neo McLaren, Takoya Porsche, Maserati MSG Racing. Like, I feel like marketing wise, it would also have to be a fit for him where it was like a sleek, sexy brand and also a competitive car. Nissan, like, that makes sense. Nissan's very competitive. I don't know. I feel like those last two seats at ERT are tricky because they aren't the most competitive team in Formula E, but you also, there's a lot of people I'd like to see driving the series. So I don't know.
Yeah. I imagine it could be then a driver from either Formula 2 who's just kind of been chucked out of the series and has found, you know, a lifeline elsewhere, or someone.
Teo Pourchaire?
I think there's a better opportunity for him in IndyCar because he already did well over there.
Yeah, that's true.
I think there's a potential better option there rather than going to a team at the back. But of course, you know, if there's not a drive and it's just like, I need to get myself out there, because the longer you don't drive, the more you're just kind of forgotten about. Potentially just getting himself a foot in the door and just be like, look, I'm here, and could pull off some stunning performances at the back of the grid. And then some of the other teams go, oh, actually, we need to give this guy a go.
Moving on, nine-time MotoGP champion Valentino Rossi will get a rookie test in BMW's LMDH prototype. Rossi currently competes in WEC in the LMGT3 category for BMW WRT. I think it would be so cool. I think it's already very cool that Valentino Rossi drives in WEC and the GT3 category. I think it'd be so cool to see him driving a prototype car, hypercar.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it'd be really cool. He's just slowly working his way up the ranks, isn't he? And now he's getting the test in the big dog, because that's
the like
top
Fernando
car,
Alonso. He's an old ass rookie.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, it'll be interesting to see, because of course Rossi, incredible rider in MotoGP, and has been doing well, of course, in sports cars and GTs. So it'd be interesting to see that move over to prototypes and seeing what that is like as well, because they are. They are very different. They are very different handling cars. And it'd be exciting to see what Rossi can do there. And also how the other drivers are going to treat him. Because again, it's a driver coming from a different category over to something that maybe they've done for the majority of their lives, to be like, okay, hang on a minute. Right, we're not going to let this old man come in and show us up here. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah, I think we exhausted all of the news that there is to talk about. And I don't know what we're going to talk about for like the next 3 weeks, like, where there's no racing.
Something drops so we can make up some games. That is everything in the news after the Singapore Grand Prix. We are going to be back next week, and hopefully a lot of news does break and drop. Otherwise, we're going to be testing each other, maybe coming up with a few little games between myself and James to keep us ticking over before the US Grand Prix. Again, as I said on the last podcast, so weird that Formula One have decided to do a 3-week break, then a triple header, then a 3-week break, then a triple header. Spread them out, all right? Give us more to talk about. But we'll be back then. Make sure you follow on whatever audio platform you're currently listening to at the moment. Follow all of the WTF1 socials, and make sure you check out myself and James on our social media channels as well. Until the next time, though, look forward to seeing you. Have a good rest of your day. Bye-bye.
Bye.